Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Narrow Corridor States, Societies, and the Fate of Liberty is a nonfiction work by Darren Acemoglu and James A. Robinson that examines how political liberty emerges, survives, or disappears, drawing on history, political economy, and comparative institutional analysis. The book argues that freedom is not a default condition, but the result of a fragile balance between state authority and social power. Its central framework distinguishes between societies trapped under too much state coercion and those left vulnerable by too little state capacity. The authors use historical examples from ancient civilizations to modern states to show that neither unchecked government nor stateless disorder produces liberty. Instead, liberty depends on a continuing struggle that keeps the state strong enough to provide order and rights, yet constrained enough to prevent domination. The book is both a theory of political development and a warning about how easily democratic institutions can weaken when civic pressure fades or state power becomes unaccountable. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the narrow corridor as a balance between the despotic Leviathan and the absent Leviathan. The book's main contribution is its corridor metaphor, which describes liberty as a precarious middle path between two failure modes. On one side stands the despotic Leviathan, a state powerful enough to control society but unchecked by meaningful constraints. On the other side is the absent Leviathan, a weak state that cannot enforce laws, protect rights, or maintain public order. Acemoglu and Robinson argue that freedom does not flourish in either extreme, because domination and insecurity both destroy the conditions people need to live autonomously. The corridor is narrow, because movement toward either side can happen gradually and reversibly. This framework helps explain why the authors reject simple narratives that equate liberty with minimal government, or, alternatively, with centralized authority alone. Instead, they define liberty as an unstable achievement produced only when state power and social resistance remain in tension. The result is a theory of politics that treats freedom as a historical accomplishment rather than a permanent institutional end state. Secondly, why state capacity is necessary but dangerous without social constraint. A major theme in the book is that the state must be strong enough to do real governing. Courts, taxation, law enforcement, public administration, and collective coordination all require capacity. Without these, society may face violence, corruption, elite capture, or fragmented authority. But the authors insist that state capacity has a double edge once power is concentrated. It can be used to suppress opposition, manipulate institutions, and convert legal authority into coercion. The book, therefore, treats effective government and liberty as related but not identical goals. A capable state is valuable only when it is simultaneously constrained by active society. This is why the authors emphasize the need for checks and balances rooted in lived political participation rather than decorative constitutional form. Their argument challenges approaches that assume institutional strength alone guarantees freedom. In their view, institutions become protective only when they are embedded in a society that can monitor, resist, and redirect state action. State capacity matters, but only as part of a contested political equilibrium. Thirdly, civil society, mobilization, and the enforcement of accountability. The book places unusual emphasis on societal power as an active force rather than a passive beneficiary of government. Liberty depends on citizens, associations, movements, and local institutions being able to organize and compel rulers to remain accountable. This is not presented as a vague cultural preference, but as a practical political mechanism. When civil society is weak, people cannot resist arbitrary rule, and even formally democratic systems can drift toward domination. When civil society is strong enough to mobilize, it can force the state to respect limits, preserve rights, and broaden inclusion. The authors repeatedly stress that checks and balances cannot simply be installed from above. They must be socially sustained by pressure, organization, and participation. This makes the book especially relevant to debates about democratization and reform, because it argues that institutional design alone is insufficient. Genuine constraint requires continual engagement from citizens who can act collectively. In that sense, the book treats liberty as a dynamic process of accountability, not merely a constitutional arrangement. Fourthly, historical comparison as a method for explaining why liberty appears in some places and not others. The authors build their argument through a wide historical range, linking ancient political orders, early modern revolutions, and contemporary states. This comparative method is important because the book rejects claims that liberty naturally follows from culture, geography, or modernization alone. Instead, it examines how different societies develop distinct relationships between rulers and the ruled, and how those relationships shape institutional outcomes. The use of cases from diverse periods allows the authors to show recurring patterns. Strong states can become predatory, weak states can collapse into disorder, and successful liberty requires ongoing contention. History is not treated as a simple sequence of progress, but as evidence that societies repeatedly enter or exit the corridor. This method also strengthens the book's practical force, because it suggests that current political problems are not exceptions but variations on older institutional dilemmas. By comparing civilizations and modern nation-states, the authors show that the struggle for liberty is not confined to any one region or era. It is a general political problem with recurring structural causes. Lastly, implications for democracy, reform, and the fragility of modern liberty. The book is also a warning about contemporary politics. Its argument implies that democracy cannot be assumed to deepen automatically, and that formal institutions can erode if state power expands without oversight, or if civic engagement declines. This makes the corridor a useful lens for thinking about development policy, nation building, and democratic reform. The authors are skeptical of top-down efforts to transplant institutions without local political foundations, because such efforts often fail to create genuine accountability. They also suggest that modern societies are not protected by history from backsliding. Economic anxiety, polarization, corruption, and weakened civic norms can all narrow the corridor by empowering either coercive state power or institutional decay. The book therefore stands out not only as a diagnosis of past political development, but as a critique of complacency in the present. It asks readers to see liberty as fragile, conditional, and always vulnerable to reversal. That makes its relevance especially strong for readers interested in governance, political economy, and the long-term durability of democratic institutions. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers interested in political science, comparative history, economics, democracy, and institutional design. It will be especially useful for people who want a serious framework for understanding why some states protect liberty, while others produce repression or chaos. Readers in public policy, development, law, and international affairs will find it valuable because it links broad theory to real questions about state capacity, accountability, and political reform. Its main intellectual benefit is that it gives a durable way to think about freedom as an unstable balance rather than a fixed achievement. That makes it more analytical than popular books on democracy and more wide-ranging than narrowly technical works in institutional economics. What sets it apart is the scale of its historical evidence and the clarity of its central metaphor. Instead of treating liberty as a slogan, it treats it as a contested political condition that must be built and defended over time. For readers willing to engage with a demanding but rewarding argument, the book offers one of the most influential modern accounts of how liberty is made, lost, and sometimes preserved. If you would like to support Darren Acemoglu, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.